If you think you can't go from politics to the divine, Carol Gold and Steve Clark are about to take you above the fray. The only agenda here is to empower you to think for yourself, ask more questions, and trust your own truth. So now, the combination talk radio has been missing. Until now, Carol Gold and Steve Clark taking you above the fray.
Hi, I'm Carol Gold. I'm here at Above the Fray, 914-803-4522, with my co-host, Steve Clark. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Carol.
Steve, in the ongoing effort to transform America, to fundamentally transform America, which is what our president said when he was running for office, and which he has successfully done, transform being defined as taking something recognizable and turning it into something brand new and unrecognizable. In that ongoing effort, today he said that he would like to see mandatory voting, that it be a law that you have to vote. And he found that that would be truly transformational for the United States, his word, not mine. And so I agree with him that it would be truly transformational. I think it is the ultimate community organizer move. Because, and I think it's a reaction to their turnout, the Democratic turnout for the midterm elections. And I think what would happen is, although he's trying to paint it as something wonderful, there are countries, Australia has that law, you have to vote. While there are countries that have that law, I think what you would see here, in my opinion, Steve, is the kind of payola that we see now in getting out the vote. We know the Democratic Party makes a real grassroots push come election time to go into minority communities and both bus in and also pay people to vote. That's an old Democratic inner city technique, and I know it firsthand from having worked for the government in Philadelphia for the Democratic Party years ago before I awakened to the Democratic Party. I think that what we would see is even more corruption and more paying of poor people and minorities to go to the polls and vote Democrat. And so this latest, the show today is about voter manipulation, both domestic and abroad, and I just find it so ironic that that's what he came out with today. Really hadn't even thought about that when we planned tonight's show. I hadn't seen that. And so I know I personally want to talk about what just happened in Israel in terms of influencing foreign voter turnout, but what do you think of that latest Obama aha moment?
Well, you're right. Australia doesn't, and my wife's country, Ecuador, has it, but it's mandatory as well. You know, Carol, I really just think that the Democrats have really figured out you know, what the game is. It's really demographics is destiny, and that's really what it comes down to. If the Democrats can get amnesty, which they're pushing for, and they can get enough people that are uneducated on the payroll, on the rolls to vote, they know that they have a bias that they are going to vote for Democrat, and they'll eventually secure power for themselves forever. I mean, the last election when Romney said that he was that it's very hard to win an election when 47% of the people are on the dole, or I shouldn't say 47% of the people are on the dole or receive some type of government job or government assistance. It's virtually impossible to win an election. And that's what he was driving at. Since so many people are dependent on the government for their paycheck now, Obama's intent and the progressives' intent is to get as many people on the payrolls and essentially bribe them and influence them to vote a certain way and forever having power in one hand. And again, I think the progressives for the short term are what will be ecstatic if they win that vote, but they have no idea what the long-term consequences of that vote is, because the reality is the power is going to get concentrated on fewer and fewer hands. And what we're going to end up is like an oligarchy like Russia, where very few people have all the wealth and everybody else is outside that power circle. So it sounds great for a progressive that the Democrats are going to control power forever. But the reality is, if you look at history, and if you look at any type of country that's run by one party, it ends in disaster.
Well, the way you say it ends is it's like socialism. On paper, in theory, socialism works. It just never works in practice. Because you get that concentration of power, you get that manipulation of the masses, and you get that elect few or elite, as you do in communist countries, who still benefit from all of the perks and all of the comforts of being the ruling class. It's exactly what will happen with what, as you say, what sounds noble on the front end, which is, oh, everyone will have to vote. Well, first of all, how many people vote out of complete ignorance currently? How many people go to the polls and they have no idea who they're voting for or why? They're either pulling a party line lever or Chad or punching a hole, or they're voting what someone else told them or someone else paid them to vote. And that's currently, you can say that about a great many of the people who vote, and they're voting of their own accord. Or they're owning because they've been bused to vote. But if you have an entire rest of the population that are forced to vote by law, you're just going to magnify the ignorance factor. The amount of people who will go to the polls and whose vote can be bought or intimidated or manipulated. Now, when you talk about manipulation, it leads me to segue to what just happened in Israel. I don't want to belabor, you know, the politics of Israel and who got elected and who didn't, although I'm delighted that Benjamin Netanyahu was reelected for a multitude of reasons. I mean, let me just preface what I'm about to say with, in full disclosure, that number one, he and I went to the same high school here in the United States. I went to Cheltenham High School, a suburb of Philadelphia, and so did Bibi. He was a few years older than I am, but I was there when he was there. And recently, my daughter, who serves in the Israeli Defense Forces, when she first went to Israel, she went through an organization that transitions out-of-country volunteers into the Israeli Army, helps them get accustomed to the culture and transition and housing, etc. And the program she was in was having a very serious housing problem in Jerusalem with her particular group. And no matter what we tried to do, we being the parents of the young people who were in that group, we were unable to affect the situation. And the situation was actually one of danger for these young people where they were being housed in Jerusalem near a very violent-ridden Arab neighborhood. And so after everyone was frustrated and didn't know what to do, I emailed Bibi, and within 24 hours, the problem was solved. Now, it wasn't solved because I know him so well that he did me a favor. And he doesn't know me pretty much from Adam, except that we have a common history. However, he solved it within 24 hours because he cares deeply about the well-being of Jews, of the well-being of Israelis, and particularly the well-being of the IDF and the young people who risk their lives every day defending Israel. And because he saw that out-of-country volunteers were in a precarious situation, he took care of it, or he certainly delegated it sufficiently that it got taken care of. Having said that, what I want to say, separate from my delight at his reelection, is that the Obama administration actually sent people over to Israel and put sort of boots on the ground by way of Paul Begala, who managed every single one of Bill Clinton's campaigns, and who was an avid and probably still is worker and organizer for Hillary Clinton, as well as, I think his name was Jeremy Byrd, who was a deputy field deputy organizer, field coordinator for Barack Obama's 2012 campaign, sent them to Israel to work against the re-election of Bibi Netanyahu. They sent them there. They sent Begala went there to work for Herzog, who ran as the candidate for the Zionist Union, which is the liberal left party, the Land for Peace party, the Let's Divide Jerusalem party, and if Obama makes a deal with Iran, he's sure it would be a good deal party. That's who Herzog was. They went there to work for Herzog and against Netanyahu. In addition, Jeremy Byrd went there through an organization called Open America, I think it is, which is a political organization funded by taxpayer dollars, I might add. And he went there to work for Victory 15, being an organization in Israel that was working on the ground to mobilize, does this sound familiar, to mobilize and get out the Arab vote. Why? Because Arab Israelis, who have the same governmental and civil rights as Jewish Israelis, 20% of the population is Arab, Israeli, and they hold seats in the Knesset, and they hold Supreme Court positions, and they hold all sorts of civil government positions, something that isn't often talked about outside of Israel. But the Arab, averaged Arab in Israel, votes Labor. They vote left. And so a Barack Obama campaign organizer flew to Israel to work against Netanyahu by busing in Arabs into the cities to vote, hoping to defeat Netanyahu. Now, think about that. We are actively, and when I say we, not me, he's not my president. He actively had people working for him and people working for the progressive and the left movement in a foreign country trying to influence and manipulate voters to defeat someone who politically disagrees on certain issues with what our president has as his political agenda. It is shameful. It is offensive. It really makes us, in many ways, as a friend of mine sometimes says, the head of the snake. It makes us a huge part of the problem. Any thoughts, Steve?
Yeah, I don't know. I find this to be despicable, that we continue to put our noses in places that it doesn't belong. I personally believe every country has its right to its own self-determination and its own right to freedom and its own right to move forward in the path that they best seem fit for their own country. Who are we to decide? What height of arrogance are we to decide what's best for their country? It seems ridiculous to me. Now, I don't want to say this is an Obama problem. The U.S. has been sticking their noses in the last 30 years in places where it shouldn't belong. But the reality is, in this environment that we live in, especially the last 5 years, Hillary Clinton boasted at length about how they went to a foreign country and killed Gaddafi and laughed about it on TV. It's horrendous, despicable, whatever you think about him, but what right do we have to go into a country and kill somebody, even if we think it's the worst person in the world? Where is that person's right to a trial? Where is that person's right to freedom? Where is that person's right to justice? We go in there and we become an executioner. And then, on top of that, we go into Israel. Let's call it what it is. I mean, Barack Obama has no history with the land, has no history with the country, has no history with the people. And he all of a sudden becomes an expert on Israel and Palestine and the situation, and gets to determine who's going to be the president or not. I just find it the height of arrogance and the height of hypocrisy that we get to go in there, or that he wanted to go in there and try to influence an election. It's the same problem that, I don't know if you follow the story, but the same thing that happened in Russia, where we tried to influence an election in Ukraine, and it blew up in our face. And all I could say is the best example, the best analogy I could give to fellow Americans who are listening to this podcast, how would we like it if a foreign country that is not on unfriendly terms with us, like a Russia or, whatever country that you don't think is on friendly terms, and they went to Mexico and they went to Canada and they tried to elect and tried to influence the politics such that they would – and put somebody that was contrary to our U.S. beliefs, we would be pretty upset. And so that's where I think we're at on this topic.
Well, I would like to say that I see another example of what I call dictatorial arrogance in this president, and I agree with you, it didn't start with him, that we have been meddling in places we don't belong for a very long time. But there's a disregard in this particular presidency for the limits of the presidency and the power of the presidency and the limitations of the Constitution. And what I want to say is that the same way that the Democrats got slaughtered in the midterm elections, and so the president made it loud and clear that he was going to proceed in every way he could with executive order. Because if he doesn't like the outcome of an election, he doesn't take that as a caution from the populace that they prefer a different track than the one his party is seeking. He just sees it as, okay, well, that didn't work out my way. Now, how can I still get my way, regardless of what the people want? The same thing just happened today with the Israeli election. He wanted Netanyahu out. He didn't get him out. So today he sent our representatives to the United Nations and read a statement into the record that if Israel continues to move to the right, we, the United States, will put pressure on Israel at the UN to sit down to negotiate a two-state solution. Now, I listened to Netanyahu today, interviewed live by Sean Hannity on talk radio, and Sean Hannity raised that issue of what we did today in the UN. And Netanyahu was careful, but he was clear that there is no force that will make negotiations happen if the parties aren't sitting down, both in good faith, to negotiate. And while he has seemingly backtracked, Netanyahu has, since the election 2 days ago, in what he said on the day of the election, which was he assured Israel there would be no two-state solution, and there's been a lot of uproar about that, and that's allegedly what has prompted Obama to do what he did today in the UN. What he clarified today was what he was saying is, under the present circumstances, there will be no two-state solution because there isn't good faith from the Palestinians, because Hamas still rules Gaza, because the charter still calls for the annihilation of the State of Israel, as does the PLO charter, and because you cannot force someone to negotiate with a party who says, basically, my ultimate goal is to annihilate you. So the point I want to make about manipulating in foreign or domestic elections is this president doesn't seem to care what the people want. He has an idea of the way the world should look, of the way the United States should look, and he's damn determined to take us and the world there. What I find so interesting and ironic and hypocritical is this proponent, this advocate of the redistribution of wealth, allegedly, they say, today bought a house in Hawaii for $8.5 million. And it's the house that Magnum P.I., if you remember the television show, was filmed. That was the house that Magnum P.I. lived in. And if you're so concerned about the poor and you're so concerned about the underprivileged, it's kind of like, you know, King Louis and Marie Antoinette, let them eat cake. As long as I'm living high off the hog, as long as I get what I want, you know, again, forgive me if I'm on a rant here, Steve, but it's like Elton John this week. You know, he called for the boycott of Dolce & Gabbana, literally the two men who are gay and who founded Dolce & Gabbana. They're no longer a couple, but they came out with a statement that children should be raised by families with a male and female mother and father. They should not be raised by gay couples. This is a gay couple making this statement. So Elton John, who has adopted, I think, two children, came out with a statement and said they should be boycotted for that statement. So you're not allowed to disagree with Elton John, or your company should be boycotted. But the point I want to make, and liken it to Barack Obama and the $8.5 million house in Hawaii, is the next day after calling for the boycott, a photo was taken by paparazzi, and it was Elton John returning to his home with a shopping bag from Dolce & Gabbana. So it's okay for him to still wear the designer clothes from Dolce & Gabbana. You shouldn't. He's allowed a call for you to boycott them, but that shouldn't stop the quality of life he has for himself. That's Barack Obama and Michelle Obama. That is the continual disregard for boundaries and parameters that they want to impose on other people but not have applied to themselves. And it appears to me, Steve, that doesn't matter whether it's domestic or foreign, which is really disturbing.
Yeah, it is. I liken it. It's sickening to me. I mean, the fact is that they're voicing an opinion. So, you know, I think it takes tremendous courage for Dolce & Gabbana to say this. I really do. I just want to make a clear point, especially in the Catholic faith. The way that we as Catholics look at it, that God has given man freedom to choose. That's his greatest gift to man, is freedom to choose, to do whatever you want. And Dolce and Gabbana, for however you want to call it, decided to make a choice, and they chose to live a gay lifestyle. Now, in that freedom of choice, that doesn't mean there's not freedom of consequences. There's consequences associated with all the decisions that you make, but there's consequences. And so they decided to elect to have their gay lifestyle, but they recognized, and they both said, we're Catholic by training. They said, you know what, this is our lifestyle, but we do not believe, and we do not think this is the right lifestyle to raise children. It seems inherently selfish to raise a child without a proper mother and father. That child is going to lose something by not having a father and mother. So we're against gay marriage, and we're against the manner and ways that children can get brought into the world. You know, basically saying as toys. And you know what? It's an opinion. It's what they believe. It's the teaching of the Catholic Church. So be it. But it's their opinion. We live in a society today that you can't even voice your opinion now. So if you don't have the right opinion, or the opinion as beholden to what the masses want to believe, or the media wants to believe, or as you said, Elton John and that fashion police, so to speak, then you're ostracized. But as you rightfully pointed out, it's bullshit. They're words. They say it, but you know, God forbid, Elton John's going to go out and buy those clothes. So that's where I think it's a scary road that we're going on, because it's back to political correctness. You can't say, or you can't say certain things, and you can't believe certain things. You have to believe the party line. So I think, listen, I give those guys a tremendous amount of credit, because they know exactly who their audience is, and they still said it.
Well, I agree with you. I give them credit too. You know, while you were talking, I thought of the most bizarre comparison. It really stopped me in my tracks, and it was, if you're in a Muslim country and Islamists, radical Islamists, ISIS or Al-Qaeda or anyone who is in favor of Sharia, and you're a Muslim and you don't live by the extreme literal Sharia law, you're going to get beheaded as fast as anybody else, because under Sharia, you either toe the party line or you're dead. It's not so different than here. You either toe the party line, you're either politically correct, you either espouse the opinions that the media and the left and those ensconced say are acceptable. You either believe in global warming or climate change, as it's now called, or as Al Gore said here in Austin last weekend at South by Southwest, you should suffer a consequence if you don't believe in climate change. Think about that. So it's only a matter of degree, right, Steve? I mean, here you don't get beheaded. Here you get ostracized. Your career gets ruined. You get boycotted. You're the outcast. You're the crazy one. But it's just a matter of degree. When you think about it, it's the same principle. It's the same controlling, dictatorial mindset of my way or the highway. I never thought about it that way before.
Yeah, we are there. I mean, you know, let's call it what it is. I mean, if you work at MSNBC or NBC or CBS and ABC, and if you hold those beliefs, good luck in trying to advance your career. You're probably not going to get very far. And having worked in finance and having worked in, you know, some of the major banks and, you know, with the, some of these people, I can tell you, those are sacred and sacrosanct opinions that you need to hold. So, yeah, I already see it in the business world that you can't even voice those opinions anymore because you will lose business. And like I said, getting back to the media, or look at Hollywood. I mean, they have it's a well-documented phenomenon of closet conservatives that live in Hollywood that to advance their career, they have to be quiet or else they'll never get a job again. So for feeding their families and staying in the profession, they go silent.
You know, this morning, a very good friend of mine texted me, and he emailed me, and he said, I've had a terrible morning. He just moved to Florida, and he's renting a room in a home of a woman, a beautiful home, not a woman he's having a relationship with, just a woman who was seeking to rent out her home, a room in her home for income, I guess. He's staying there while he figures out whether he's going to rent or buy a property. And he emailed me that he happens to be a Christian by birth, and he's now a Lutheran minister. He emailed me and he said, I've had a terrible morning. The conversation came up somehow about the Israeli election, and I was bombarded with all of this hatred for the Jews and the Israelis, and they are the problem in the world, and we need to be rid of them. And all of her opinions are gathered from or gained from a friend of hers who's clearly a virulent anti-Semite. And my friend had never really known a Jew until he met me. And so he said, this is unbelievable. I don't know what to do. I mean, and so I sent him some websites and things that he could give her to look at. And I said, but listen, don't waste too much time, because if she is who she appears to be, you can't change a hater's mind. And you probably can't change their heart either, at least, you know, without a whole lot of effort that you may not want to put in. But what I found so fascinating was that, to me, it's typical of people who hold opinions based on no fact. I mean, not Jimmy Kimmel. I can't think of the other comedian that
Jimmy Fallon?
Ted Cruz went on 2 nights ago or 1 night ago. And the comedian said to him, yes, Seth Meyers said to him, you know, we've just had the hottest year in record, and because of global warming. And the reality is that we haven't had a hotter year than 1997. It hasn't been hotter since 1997. The computer models all say it should be hotter, but the satellite data shows us that it hasn't been hotter. But everybody you talk to says they believe in global warming because we're getting hotter every year, because people like Seth Meyers say that with no factual basis. But that's the politically correct viewpoint. And Seth Meyers' response to Ted Cruz was, you mean you don't believe in computers? Well, the answer to that is, I believe in data before I believe in projections, because the satellites are beaming real-time data. And the computers are models that are projections. And so we really have to wake up and begin to discern illusion from reality, fact from fiction, and manipulation from thinking for ourselves. Steve, we have less than a minute. You want to close it out?
Carol, you don't even want me to go on this rant, but this one drives me absolutely bonkers. The fact is, I'll just make it as quickly as possible, you can change the temperature of the earth depending on where you put the sensors. So are the sensors in cities? Are the sensors on the tarmac? Are the sensors in the grass? Are the sensors in the shade? Where are the sensors being placed? I mean, you can go on and on and on to see where the data is coming from. And even then, we don't even know where the data is coming from. This is a topic that's for a whole nother show, but I'm just saying you have to be open to the fact that there's a lot of things we still don't know. And the fact is, the science is not conclusive, although the media wants you to believe otherwise.
15 seconds, we'll leave you with this thought. Science thought the Big Bang was how the universe started, and now they're saying they were wrong. It's eternal. Sounds a lot like God and religion, doesn't it? Thanks for listening. Spread the word. I'm Carol Gold. We're out of time.
I'm Steve Clark. Thanks.
You've been listening to Above the Fray with Carol Gold and Steve Clark, from politics to the divine. Thanks for being a part of a new way to see the world. Visit our website at AboveTheFrayPodcast.com and like us on our Facebook fan page, Facebook.com/AboveTheFrayPodcast. This has been Carol Gold and Steve Clark, taking you always above the fray.